Welcome back to another episode of the Catholic Buzz Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Father Daniele, and I'm joined by Josh Sullivan.
Hello.
Welcome, Josh.
Thank you.
And Matt Van Milligan.
Hello.
Welcome to you.
Thank you.
We have finally received the sort of, long anticipated document, but really we've been waiting for like 3 weeks.
Yeah. They started announcing it probably about 3 weeks ago as you know, like they start putting feelers out there. Hey, guys, there's something coming out in about 3 weeks. Guess what?
You know? Which, to begin with, is odd.
Yes. Well, the working document, though, has been in draft stages since about 2018.
That's right. Like 5 years.
So it's one of those things that people were really excited about, and then time went on and forgot about.
Yes.
And then, yeah, there have been kind of peaks and valleys of excitement for this document, but it's finally here.
And then, like, 3 weeks ago, they were like, this document on human dignity is coming out soon. And then, voila.
It's out today.
It's been published today by the Vatican. Dignitas Infinita, on human dignity. And so the purpose, I guess, like you said, it's been the Instrumentum Laboris has been around since 2018. That's the working document. It's a lot of stuff has included here. Some of the things that Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict, Pope Francis in his encyclical Fratelli Tutti. Also, it's the 75th anniversary of the United Nations document, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So the Church publishes this Declaration on Human Dignity, and lots of great stuff in it. It's available on the Vatican website for you to read in full, but we'll go through it a little bit today and see. And I think, you know, right off the bat, I think it's beautiful that the Church weighs in on this topic, because some in the world might say, what can the Church teach us about human dignity, right? Mm-hmm. Especially today, you know, maybe people are sort of far from allowing the Church to sort of give us teachings on our human life or whatever it is. But I think the Church, it's beautiful that the Church releases this document, and the Church has lots to say on human dignity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the very first things when the Pope talking about the 75th anniversary of the Declaration of Human Rights from the United Nations, one of the things he says was very specifically, this is a great starter document, meaning it's a great place to start. There's a lot of work that needed here. And I think that what happened is, like, Pope Francis, we were saying this before the show, but I think this document is pretty much like one of the things that's very close to Pope Francis's heart. I think a lot of times when he speaks off the cuff, when he speaks from his heart about any circumstance, he's normally talking about human dignity. And then it ends up being translated into all sorts of different political views and everything else. But if you take it and you look at whatever Pope Francis says through the light of this document, like if this is the eyes that we look at it, I think it always goes back to in line with the Catholic Church and teaching, and specifically this document.
Yeah, especially if you're, like, a lot of people might encounter or like hear about the fact that this document was released through kind of other headlines or other news stories that talk about the things that they don't like, that, you know, because it does touch on a number of what would be kind of hot button issues on kind of just Catholic morality. You know, it provides a framework. You know, the document is about human dignity and the basis of human dignity that needs to form kind of the foundation or the framework of all of our discussions about kind of these social justice issues or
morality.
You know, these kind of other kind of more contentious kind of morality issues. Yeah.
Yeah, I love how near the beginning of the document it touches upon, like, Pope Benedict saying, you know, like, human dignity is a fundamental principle of like that everyone has, based on the fact that Jesus Christ died and rose again for us. Like, Jesus gave his life for us, right? So there's so much the Church can say on this topic. Especially what I love about the Church is that it defends the rights of all people in so many ways that I don't think it gets enough credit for. And you're right that it will be hidden, I think, in those sort of issues that people will have difficulties with, right? But really, a beautiful document from start to finish. Not very difficult to read either, right? No, it's not very theological, like, not very language that's dense and theological.
It's 28 pages, I'm going to say, and it can be boring at points, but...
I was going to say, unless for those who don't really kind of geek out about this stuff when it comes out and, you know, we print it off and we're excited to kind of go through it, it really does tackle a lot in the space that it has. So yeah, like really an does. Initial look, you're like, oh, this is pretty long. When you get into kind of the meat of what it's of how ambitious it is in the topics it's trying to address, it's actually quite dense, or it's actually, you know, covering a lot of ground in what is kind of a small space.
So the document makes four distinctions of human dignity, right?
Yeah.
And those are ontological dignity, moral dignity, social dignity, and existential dignity. Okay, a breakdown of those quickly. Ontological dignity belongs to a person just by the very fact that they exist. It's something... belongs to us.
And it says that it's the most important. Like, this is the first part of dignity. A lot of people want to break it up and look at it through social dignity or through what all those. But this is the first one. And if we hold fast to because they exist, they possess dignity.
And, you know? And more than that, our ontological dignity follows from the fact that we are made in the image and likeness of God.
Exactly.
And one of the early, it makes a clear distinction between ontological dignity and the other types of dignity in that ontological dignity isn't circumstantial.
Yeah.
Can't be removed.
Can't be revoked.
Doesn't change as kind of our situation changes or as our kind of capacities fluctuate.
Yeah, they use the word indelible, right? And that's something that the document says remains valid beyond any circumstance which a person may find themselves in life. Like, nothing can take away your dignity that is given to you by being willed, created, and loved by God, right? Yeah. So that's the first dignity that they mention. This, the next one is moral dignity, and that's that the document refers to how people exercise their freedom.
They say that people have a conscience and they can act against it, but like moral dignity is how people choose to use that freedom, and that's everyone should have the freedom to exercise their will.
Yeah, and we have the freedom to exercise our moral dignity and choose the good.
Yes.
We also have the freedom to choose ill, to choose evil. Again, this is one of the types of dignity that can fluctuate. That is, like, we can compromise our moral dignity by committing sin. Sin obscures our sense of moral dignity and removes us from what it's intended to do.
And that's what differs it from an ontological dignity.
There's nothing we can do there.
Exactly. Yeah. The next one is social dignity. It refers to the quality of a person's living conditions, right? And this one is maybe one that some people might have a problem with.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah. This one may be a bit more controversial in that some people will take issue with the correlation between an individual's circumstances and their capacity or their ability to choose the good. So again, people will statistically draw a correlation between poverty and a potential to, or even just kind of population demographics, that, you know, you have more crime committed in an area where you have lower socioeconomic stability. And you certainly have this, and it talks about it as it gets into some of these issues, you know, in war, people's social or ability to make good choices or exercise their dignity can be compromised by circumstance and, you know, just
exactly
the resources they have available.
If they don't even have like the bare necessities of life, that compromises how they live and how they can even live up to the potential of their dignity.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Oh, and just the issue that people might take with this is that it might be leaning a little bit towards Marxism and the idea that these circumstances are deterministic, that you can't expect virtue from people who are in kind of abject situations. But, you know, Catholic moral teaching is that no, you are always required to make the right choice. Yeah.
Okay, and the last one is that existential dignity, and that is the type of dignity implied in the ever-increasing discussion about a dignified life and one that is not dignified, it says. The document is basically saying that people may appear to lack nothing essential for life for various reasons, but they may still struggle to live with peace, joy, and hope.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it even takes into account, though, too, that people, like, one of the things that we say is not to to live in a non-dignified way would be things like serious illness or disease or disability of some sorts. And they would suggest, well, that means this, that, or the other thing. And it says very specifically there, I think, something about the, along the lines of other hardships may drive people to experience their life condition as undignified vis-a-vis their perception of that ontological dignity that can never be obscured. Mm-hmm. So they would say, well, this is undignified, and so there are, you know, like, and this when it comes to things like maid or things like, you know, like, this person shouldn't be alive because of they're going to have an undignified life. But that would be existential dignity that we're talking about, because you can't take away, again, the church is saying there is this dignity that you have that you cannot take away. It's not circumstantial, it's not anything, it's because God loves you, because God created you who you are. And so those are the four types of dignity that you can kind of see, like, that see, but one of them stands above the rest and gives the person its worth and can't be changed by our perception.
And one of the, I think, the brilliant things about this document is that it recognizes that there's a trend in the broader culture to talk about dignity. Like, even you brought up maid, you have this, like, dying with dignity. Like, they're really talking about that existential dignity. They're talking about the kind of a perceived value that is rooted in, you know, whether or not this person is able to continue to contribute to society, or it's, you know, it's a worth based on how much of a burden they present. Like, it's their very existence. Is kind of compromising their dignity. They're saying that the problem is, you know, our discussion about all of these, you know, hot button controversial issues is ignoring the fact that ontological dignity is prior to all of these other things. That if you have kind of a society that's discussing dignity in terms of just the moral, existential, and social, which, you know, a lot of, you know, you participate in these discussions about these issues, that is the focus in many cases that denies that ontological dignity. You're missing the starting point. You're outside of, you know, what you would say a Catholic anthropology, a Catholic view of humanity. And that's really, really problematic for our understanding of these problems. But it provides a really, really good framework for if you want to have a conversation with someone who's maybe not versed in these things, you know, this framework is a really, really good starting point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times we enter these conversations at the disagreement, at the kind of ideological level, when, you know, this provides a really good foundation for introducing that Catholic anthropology, introducing that framework of, you know, you are made and everyone is made in the image and likeness of God, and there is an irrevocable dignity that accompanies that.
Yeah, and then the document kind of goes into that, right? Like the in the image of God, how Christ elevates our dignity and things like that. But you're right. That's why ontological dignity is seen as the sort of supreme of the four that they mention in this document. But it's funny because oftentimes it's within the other three categories that dignity is often measured in our society, right? And you're right. The conversation is off to a wrong start because we often sort of ignore or overlook the ontological dignity that each one of us have just by being willed and created by God. Mostly it's measured in today's world with those other three categories. Right?
I think the document sums up a lot of that right at bullet point number 24. It says, first, there has been a growing awareness of human dignity. Many misunderstandings of the concept still distort its meaning. And this is the part I like. Some people propose that it is better to use the expression personal dignity and the rights of the person instead of human dignity and the rights of man, since they understand a person to be only one who is capable of reasoning. They then argue that the dignity and rights are deduced from the individual's capacity for knowledge and freedom, which is not all humans then possess, because they can't reason. Things like, I'm going to say a baby, or maybe a somebody with a disability that might not be able to reason to the full capacity of another human being. And so they're saying that there's a mistake here, because, again, that dignity doesn't come from circumstance, doesn't come from choices or from that.
It's a really beautiful thing for all Catholics to, and all people of goodwill, to reflect on, right? Yeah. Like when dealing with your family, your friends, people in your community, do we often look at each other as people who have that human dignity that you're talking about, or the document talks about, that ontological dignity, right? And it's not so much my personal dignity, exactly. Right? That it's sort of this communal dignity that we have as being loved, created by God, right? And made in his image.
The other part I like about it is too, is just that man, like, that we as humans, I mean, as the church can argue this point for every argument that's out there.
For sure.
And so, like, whether it comes to abortion, whether it comes to war, and like, this is the kind of conversation that we can have now when it comes to mate and abortion. It's kind of easy to kind of talk about those things simultaneously as well as apart. But when it comes to war, what about war? When it comes to human life, this is a conversation that defends the same thing all the way through. It doesn't change because of people's circumstances.
Yeah, and let's get into those circumstances document actually specifically mentions as grave violations of human dignity, because you're right, that ontological dignity, even though some of these fall into the other three categories, right, that is sort of the argument that can be used in every situation, even in some of these things that people might not agree with, right?
Before we jump into that, I think what you said is really important about that even though the document presents, we'll say, Catholic anthropology, that it appeals to people of goodwill. Like, even the fact that it is, it references the 75th anniversary of the UN's declaration. At a number of points in the document, it says that these principles are, recognizable even by reason alone. Again, we are presenting an ontology. We're saying that this is rooted in our being created in the image and likeness of God. But I think it's Alistair MacIntyre, who's a Catholic philosopher. He wrote a book called Dependent Rational Animals, where he talks about a lot of times we talk about kind of our personal dignity, but not necessarily referencing our human dignity or kind of the broader dignity. And he goes through kind of a thought experiment of these. He said that, okay, what's our criteria? Is it our ability to reason? Is it our capacity? Like, are these the things that qualify us for dignity? And he goes through he cites the fact that even though, you know, our capacities are well developed now as, you know, as grown human beings, every single person enters life in a state of complete and utter dependence. Every person exits life usually in a state of complete and utter dependence. So if we protract our humanity over the whole course of our life, all of us are in this situation where our reason is deficient. We don't meet the criteria at various points. So I think it's really interesting to say that it's an appeal to people of goodwill, people who, you know, have intellectual honesty, who are willing to approach these subjects with a broader framework.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually very true. And I think, you know, it's kind of like, it's kind of like a nice thing to say, like, you know, when you say, you know, treat others with kindness, or the golden rule that you learn. But you're right, at like, if all of humanity recognized that at one part of our life or another, we rely on each other, right? And that goodness inside of us that's given to us by God, we should be sort of helping each other in those moments. So these grave violations that the document mentions, the first one they mentioned is the drama of poverty. Yeah. And I think this one's close to the heart of Pope Francis. You know, he says to reach out to the peripheries. Pope Francis, they quote him in this document here. You know, he says, while wealth has increased together with inequality, the result is that new forms of poverty are emerging, right? There's various forms of poverty that it says are taking, but that is an attack on human dignity.
Yeah, and it's interesting too that, like, a lot of times people will want to say that this characterizes Pope Francis's view, that this really encapsulates a lot of his kind of social teaching. But I like that he cites Pope Benedict. just to say that the world's growing wealth is growing in absolute terms, but inequalities are on the increase. There's a lot of reference and throwback to Vatican II, to Pope Paul VI, to John Paul II, even to Benedict, who people often try to set Pope Francis in opposition to say that there's a continuity here in social teaching, that this is a real problem.
Yeah,
and I think it's a good thing to remind ourselves, you know, we are not a poverty is not absent from our day-to-day life. We see the struggles that people have. We see people living on our streets. That's in our local community. And then on a greater level, we see people without, right? And I think being more aware of that, wherever you are, wherever, however you can help, to recognize, you know, often our first thought is to see people living in poverty in our local communities as an inconvenience to us. You know, they're wasting our time. They're asking for my resources. They're doing whatever it is. Again, we're going back to that ontological dignity that exists, and the fact that even existential dignity, just because in this period of this person's life, whether there's addictions, whether there's just maybe whether just lack of work, money. Yeah. Maybe whatever it might be, this moment in their life doesn't make them any less worth than us.
Yeah.
Right?
And dignifies the same. In the theme of throwbacks, the reading from Acts this past Sunday was about kind of the early church. And
everyone pooled together.
Yeah. And gave to each as they had a need.
Exactly. Yeah. War is the next one that the document mentions, I guess for obvious reasons, right? But also a good thing that the church speaks out against. A number of things under this category, war, terrorist attacks, racial persecution, religious persecution, and it says many other affronts to human dignity. It says they've become so common, right? This is a real setback to any progress.
It says in there too, a war is the, where is it, the word exactly? War is always a defeat of humanity.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the purpose is, whatever else, it's always a lose-lose battle, if you will. And so a war is never worth the tears of a mother who has seen her child killed. It's no war is worth the loss of even one human being life. Doesn't matter what the doesn't matter what the war is over, it's not worth that if we can avoid it.
And as an appeal to, again, people of goodwill, that this is this is discernible by reason alone. The fact that this references the 75th year of the UN Declaration, like that was World War II ended, and you know a big part of that declaration is like this shouldn't or can't or you know definitely, hopefully won't happen again, at least to the degree. But again, the fact that you know this is published in the context where you have two very significant wars being fought globally now, that you know there's direct implications on our time. But again, it references not just those with the Catholic anthropology. It says everyone should be able to recognize this as problematic.
And there should be an outcry. I mean that we should that we should be asking. Okay, let's do what we can to stop this. It's not worth it.
The travail of migrants is another one that you know, and this touches nerves. I think for some people, right?
Especially what's going on with the States and even Canada right now.
Right, exactly. And the document says that migrants are among the first victims of multiple forms of poverty. It says not only is their dignity denied in their home countries, but also their lives are put at risk because they no longer have the means to start a family, to work, or feed themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So it says once they've arrived in countries that should be able to accept them, migrants are not seen as entitled like others to participate in the life of society. Mm-hmm. This is...
if you're seeing those people, thinking... one of the things I remember talking with my boys this week or 2 weeks ago and stuff, and we were talking about different situations, different circumstances. And one of the things, put yourself in their shoes. Put yourself in what would your mom and dad do if we were in a similar situation? For immigration or that kind of stuff, would we do what we could to get you a better life? Would we do everything? Would I sacrifice everything, come over and work in a country that potentially could provide that better life for you? Work 60 hours a week and try. Like, would I do that? Yes, I would. We're fortunate enough to be living in a country that provides me that. So if we put ourselves in those shoes, again, your worth is still the same. Every human life is worth is still the same.
I think it's it does a bit to avoid some of the potential controversy by saying countries that should be able to that are able to accommodate them because this is you would say interpreted differently in European countries that have a more of an issue with you would say population density than you know, Canada or the United States. You know, so you could also say that like this encourages, you know, responsible immigration policies, you know, that which may or may not be kind of an open door policy on on migration. But that's, you know, the heart of what it's saying is it's like that denying people opportunity for a life where they can, you know, choose, you know, escape war, escape these, we'll say kind of the situations that compromise their social or existential dignity. If you're able to provide those opportunities and you don't, again, this is something that we should really examine, or this is something that we should call into question.
And like you said, like responsible immigration policies, and I think it's open door policy isn't necessarily the right policy. It's not what it's saying, and it's not saying that closed door policy is the right policy. It's saying responsible policies. So making the right decisions based on the country that could provide these things. How many could you reasonably do that without putting other people at risk? How much can you, like, you know what I mean? And I think that's a good policy to have.
Yeah, human trafficking, and it says human trafficking must be counted among the grave violations of human dignity. You know, Pope Francis has spoken out about this before, and you know, this trading of people.
Yeah.
You know,
as a commodity versus you know, like you lower their dignity to being a thing, to being a, you know what I mean, or their. The view of their dignity to being a thing. You can't lower their dignity in some aspect, but like what we interpret them as is a payable object.
They're commodified.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is terrible, you know, and it says that the church must not, it says the church and humanity, again, the people of goodwill, must never cease fighting against the marketing of human organs, tissues, the sexual exploitation of boys and girls, slave labor, including prostitution. The drug and weapons trade, terrorism, international organized crime, all these things that are part and parcel of this commodifying of human beings, right? And I think it's terrible. And I think that maybe people aren't aware that it happens more frequently than we think, even in our own local communities.
Yeah.
Which is terrible. It's terrible. Sexual abuse is the next thing that they mention. And right, what I appreciated here about this document that it acknowledges the fact that sexual abuse as something that is an abuse to human dignity, that the church has also suffered from this. It's not pointing the finger outside of the church, right? No. It says that the church is aiding the efforts to put an end to all kinds of abuse, and it's going to start from within, right? Or it has from within. So I think this, you know, that it mentions the deep scars that people have from the abuse.
And saying that these sufferings are ones that can last a lifetime with no repentance no repentance can remedy.
Yeah.
It's a scar that happens that there isn't no healing, that there could be no healing just from saying sorry. Like, these are things that happen. And so, we know that the only thing that can heal them is Jesus, like, is bringing them back. But, these are things to bring up.
And we know lots of people have suffered in this area of life. And it sets you off on a horrible path, a difficult path. For those, you know, we were just talking before on the air
about the celebrities
that are coming out now with this, and you hear about sexual abuse in the music industry, in the acting world, all these different places, and it's terrible. You see what it does to people after suffering.
You see the child stars that come out, and then all of a sudden, what happened to them?
Yeah,
you know, and then it obviously, you know, hurt, pain, suffering.
Violence against women is
I thought this one was an interesting one. I'm glad that the church touches on this.
Yeah, and it gives like three whole paragraphs in this document here to this topic. It says, and it makes a really good point right at the beginning. It says, while the equal dignity of women may be recognized in words, the inequalities between women and men in some countries remain very serious.
Yeah, the kind of, again, a throwback to Pope Paul VI's Humanae Vitae, where he makes a number of predictions that if the culture at large moves away from Catholic anthropology, the Catholic view of, you know, specifically kind of marriage and sexuality, that, you know, he made some predictions. One of them would be an increase in violence against women, human trafficking, sexual abuse, the commodification of individual, and like the fact that this document is addressing these almost in order of the way that they're presented in, you know, 1968, as, you know, in response to the sexual revolution, which was supposed to, you know, be the equalizing force between men and women. It was supposed to kind of achieve all of these social justices in effect or in kind of consequence. You know, they've either created these problems or exacerbated them kind of wildly to the point where, you know, this correction is definitely warranted.
Yeah, it mentions like equal pay for equal work. It mentions protections for working mothers, fairness in career advancements, equality of spouses, which is something right in the marriage liturgy when husband and wife get married in the sacrament of marriage in the Catholic Church. Equality of spouses, right there. It says it also mentions sexual violence. And here's where it said to condemn the widespread hedonistic and commercial culture, which encourages the systematic exploitation of sexuality and corrupts even very young girls into letting their bodies be used for profit. So right from an early age, does that start? Yeah.
And often to satisfy the selfishness of male.
And that was
one of the things that kept, and that was talking also about coercive abortions, that like, so parents or people getting women to have an abortion because of their influence on that woman, practice of polygamy. Like it dives in deep here. Yeah. And I thought that was, I was like, oh wow. Okay. And yeah. Oh, there's three whole paragraphs. Whereas in like sexual abuse has one small paragraph. And I was like, wow, I wonder what they're going to talk about there. And it dives in with a little bit of everything, you know? It's very cool.
We have abortion and surrogacy are the two next topics. So the church stands for the dignity of every human being right from conception, and calls abortion a grave abuse of human dignity. And the church has always stood for the lives of those who are conceived. And, you know, this obviously is very contested today. A lot of people get heated on either side of the debate, right? And people may not like this part of the document, but it's something that I think we should consider as Catholics, you know, because I think what's lost in the abortion debate is that it gets too passionate. So even faithful Catholics who don't stand for abortion, you know, like don't want to get involved in the discussion because of the passions around this topic. And I think when we bring it back to recognizing that it's a grave sin against the dignity of people who are created, and the document uses the word willed into life by God, like, you don't want to go march on the street, or you don't want to go hold a sign, but I think all of us need to do a better job to really be people who show that we love life right from the moment of conception.
Yeah.
That's I think should be something right in the heart of every Catholic.
And again, you get it from the moment of conception till natural death.
Like that's
where you have that dignity that you cannot change just because God loved and created you.
Yeah.
Surrogacy is a topic that is kind of going back with that commodity. You know, we're just
exchange
kind of
exchange of your body for, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
And even if you wanted to do it, I mean, you're getting something out of it. There's an exchange of life, and you're specifically, it goes into talk about every child deserves and possesses the dignity to have their father and their mother and their, you know, like, and to be in the proper state.
And not be it says not to be a product of a transaction.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was a great thing to point out. Euthanasia, we were talking about made from life from conception to natural death.
And this is suicide.
This is popping up in lots of families, lots of places where people feel like a burden. Remember the existential, like people feel like their lives are shutting down, or their health is shutting down, whatever it might be. And this is the way that could be death with dignity. The church says no, that the true dignity is that we see life to the natural end, right? Mm. And that we care for people We care for people. Yeah. That's why it's great to be there for family members or friends to support places who offer beautiful palliative care.
I think a lot of times when you're looking at both abortion and euthanasia, a lot of times it comes into almost a selfish, like in a way, the father, the mother, and they're taking a selfish, well, I can't afford a kid right now. Or in the same time, well, the government can't afford to put this person up, or the kids don't want to have to keep visiting this person. They're a burden on their family, they're a burden on society, they're a burden. And so realizing that your dignity has nothing to do with your usefulness. And as we talked about it, coming back to it, every person came into this world probably as not being useful and probably will leave the world not being useful, but that's part of our life. And I think if anybody that grew up with, I'm going to say a disabled person in their house or that kind of thing, someone that had to be cared for all the way through life, I think most people will tell you that that person has been a bigger gift to their family, bigger gift to their own personal, realizing that your needs, like unselfishly being able to give love and respect to another human being just because they deserve it because of their dignity. And it doesn't matter what they do or whether they're useful or not, but being able to care for this person, that teaches us something. And so we bring that back to babies or we bring that back to somebody who's at the end of their life, respecting that and taking care of them.
Or even the disabled, like we were talking about like that, because that's the next thing that it mentions in the document, you know, those who are disabled, like a better care for them. We are running out of time on our show, so it does talk about those who are disabled. It talks about gender theory, sex changes, all against the dignity of the human being. But I do want to mention how it specifically mentions, which I love, in a papal document, digital violence.
Yeah. Social media. The last one. Yeah.
Digital violence, and it says how the digital environment is also, it's one of loneliness, manipulation, exploitation, and violence, and even to the extreme case of the dark web. And it can expose people to the risk of addiction, isolation, and gradual loss of contact with concrete reality. It says the internet is also a channel for spreading pornography and the exploitation of persons for sexual purposes or through gambling. A beautiful thing for the church to touch on, because it's such a it's so desperately needed to be heard today.
Yeah,
this document is available on the Vatican website. It's on human dignity. I think it's an eye opener for all of us who maybe take some of these areas in our life for granted in the way we relate to people, and in the way we've kind of underestimated the role that we can play as Christians, right? Christ, like the document says, has elevated our dignity. And I think we, as people who are living like Christ, have a duty and a responsibility to contribute to making that happen in our world, whether that's in our local community or beyond. That's all the time we have today. So if you have anything to contribute, you can make a comment in our social media or drop us an email at askus@thecatholicbuzz.com. And for Josh Sullivan and Matt Van Milligan, my name is Father Daniele. We'll see you next time on The Catholic Buzz.